Ford turns profitable.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Ford told us this morning it earned $2.7 billion last year, and they managed that feat despite being stuck with more debt than their bailed-out, bankrupted friends GM and Chrysler. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
When CEO Alan Mulally took over in 2006, he went to work right away improving quality, cutting jobs, unloading brands. Then he lined up a $23 billion credit line, meaning Ford never needed to come to the government for a bailout, says John Wojcanowicz of IHS Global Insight.
That in turn led to the American consumer taking another look at Ford as kind of a little engine that could. As a company that got through adversity when others couldn't, there must be something special there.
Now, he says, with Chrysler a shadow of its former self, GM struggling to bounce back from bankruptcy, and Toyota pulling models because of faulty accelerators, Ford sitting pretty.
Because the previous quality leader was Toyota, and now Toyota is sullied with these problems. So you got Ford sitting at the top of the quality list. Wow, what a great place to be.
Analysts expect U.S. auto sales to pick up in 2011 and beyond. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Mitchell alluded to the bad news for Ford today. The company has stopped making some full-sized commercial vehicles in China because the gas pedals came from the same supplier involved in the recall at Toyota. Not exactly a great argument for globalization. I bring that up because globalization has taken a bunch of hits in the last year or so, and skepticism about global trade is showing up this week at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. We continue our special coverage from Davos now. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is there. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Bo.
What sense are you getting about attitudes toward free trade and globalization at this year's meeting?
Well, historically, of course, Davos has been practically synonymous with free trade, globalization, unfettered free markets. But the global economic crisis and all the abuses it exposed have, to some extent, discredited what we might call the Davos model. And there are more critics of that model here than ever before.
Who are those critics?
Well, interestingly, historically, they've been outside protesting with placards. They've been the losers from globalization. Now you've got more of the dissidents inside the tent. For example, the fast emerging economies of the world, especially China, which feels that its deep-rooted suspicions of the free market, free-for-all, have been vindicated by the crisis. And the Chinese feel their authoritarian approach seem even better now. So what you have here is a growing ideological rift. Ian Bremmer, boss of the Eurasia consultancy, says there's now a threat to the whole ethos of this annual gathering.
The spirit of Davos implies an underlying agreement on values, on economic values in the World Economic Forum, and that agreement no longer exists.
The starkest example, of course, of that clash of values is between the U.S. and China over issues like free speech and currency manipulation, and these issues will be surfacing at a major seminar here in Davos today.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in Davos, Switzerland. Thank you.
Okay, Bill.
And our special coverage from Davos continues later today on Marketplace. Stephen will tell us why even the Swiss are complaining about bankers. Now let's do the numbers. The NASDAQ is down almost 1.5% this morning. The S&P 500 and the Dow somewhat less, but the Dow is off 89 points at 10,146. European shares are down 0.5%, while Asian markets gained nearly 2%. This morning we got some corporate earnings that looked pretty decent, but we also got news on durable goods orders and weekly unemployment claims that continued to disappoint.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, offering business owners financial guidance for the long term. Information is at massmutual.com. By Microsoft, offering cloud computing for businesses with solutions for managing the transition to the cloud while managing costs for customers at microsoft.com/cloud services. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. ConstantContact.com.
In his State of the Union speech yesterday, President Obama made a call to freeze discretionary spending in some parts of the federal budget. Chief economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial says Obama is caught between spending to stimulate the economy and reducing the deficit.
Well, the reality is spending today is necessary, but if we want to get a hold on our budgets going forward, we have to have a plan in place to rein in spending and raise taxes. I mean, the bottom line is we're an overspent, undertaxed economy, and the only way you get down your deficits down is to hit it from both sides, which neither side likes those solutions.
Today, the president announces another spending plan to bring high-speed rail to U.S. cities, including Tampa, Orlando, Cincinnati, and Cleveland. From the Marketplace Transportation Desk, Colin Campbell reports.
High-speed rail projects are being funded by the federal stimulus. The goal for the White House is to create jobs with this money. The problem is, the only people who know how to do this sound like this.
High-speed trains.
High-speed rail.
State-of-the-art trains.
The world leaders in high-speed rail are from Spain, Japan, and Germany. But when they set up shop, they will be required to get 60% of train parts from U.S. suppliers. Companies like Talgo of Spain are ready to hire U.S. workers. Here's Antonio Perez, CEO of American Operations.
As an equation, you could say like every 12 trains, 350 jobs.
But after the trains and the tracks are built, what's left for the economy? State transportation officials say more people can commute into cities from more remote areas. And business travel will become cheaper and easier, says David Crane. He's an economic advisor to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So you look at Pixar, which is based in Emeryville in the East Bay, which is now owned by Disney, which is down in Los Angeles. Well, the people who work in those communities, when they can work with each other directly more often, you will tend to increase productivity.
So the shovel-ready projects funded today may make the rest of us more productive tomorrow. In New York, I'm Colin Campbell for Marketplace.
And finally, 25 years ago, the pop stars of the day recorded a fundraiser for African hunger relief. Now musician Quincy Jones is re-recording the song and sending the money to Haiti. And the singers this time? That's still a secret. This is Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.